Welcome to this special presentation by Marshall Masters, a former CNN science feature producer and the publisher of the Colbrin Bible. You can learn more about this 3,600-year-old secular wisdom text at colbrin.com. That's K-O-L-B-R-I-N.com.
The Colbrin Bible is a newly revealed 3,600-year-old secular wisdom text. It was authored in two parts, and the first part was written by Egyptian scholars shortly after the Exodus. The second part was written by Celtic priests shortly after the death of Jesus. This ancient secular text is stirring a lot of controversy. It warns us that an object called the Destroyer, which caused Noah's flood and the 10 plagues of Exodus, will return in our lifetime, which directly counters the Old Testament version that shows the 10 plagues of Exodus as a punishment upon Pharaoh for being so hard-hearted. And in the latter parts of the Colbrin Bible, the Celtic authors tell us that the Celts embraced Jesus and his teachings. They considered him to be not their Lord and Savior, but their Lord and Master, and they rejected him as Messiah, but still he was the light of their lives. Consequently, the Colbrin Bible has been considered to be a heretical document for millennia. So with regards to the charge of heresy, well, that's an old saw. However, there's a new accusation. There are those that call it a hoax, a fabrication. And that's what this audio report is all about. As the publisher of the Colbrin Bible, I'm going to walk you through the process by which we vetted the manuscript to ensure that it is not a hoax. And to do that, we bench-tested it, so to speak, against the most successful hoax of the 20th century, most commonly known as the Hitler Diaries. Back in 1983, Der Stern magazine proudly announced to the world that they had acquired Adolf Hitler's journal, a 62-volume motherlode covering the crucial years of 1932 to 1945. Oh boy, they really thought they hit the gold on that one, but eventually it was found out that they had been taken in by a hoax, and reading the hoax was a real tedious job as well, because it was stupefyingly dull and trivial. It didn't reveal anything novel about Hitler's state of mind. In fact, it actually plagiarized a substantial amount of content from a book called Hitler's Speeches and Proclamations. So how successful was this hoax? Der Stern paid 9.9 million marks. Ouch. Now, if there's one thing that proves, there really is a sucker born every minute. And this was the con of cons in the publishing business, which is exactly why we used it as our internal benchmark when we vetted the Colbrin Bible so that we would know it is not a hoax. Because we're the first to admit, this is a valid question. Because those who do call it a hoax do raise concerns. Even though these self-appointed debunkers never buy a copy of the book or read it in a library, and they typically have a history of making outlandish accusations like this in defense of their own belief systems and agendas. So with that thought in mind, I'm going to walk you through the very process we used to vet the Colbrin Bible. There's no real difference between an ancient manuscript like the Colbrin Bible and a painting. If you're going to vet their authenticity, you start with the work itself. For example, when you're vetting a painting, experts will look for brushstrokes, paint chemistry, and so forth. These are physical properties that are easily quantified. And the same holds true for an ancient manuscript like the Colbrin Bible. Instead of looking at brushstrokes and paint chemistry, we look at three primary issues: organization, voice, and demand. To help illustrate the concept, let's use the most successful hoax ever perpetrated in recent times. It was the Hitler's Diary scam that was run on Stern magazine in West Germany. Stern magazine was absolutely taken with the hoax. They felt it was authentic. Now, they were not alone. The London Sunday Times, the New York Times, and Newsweek magazine were all likewise duped. However, Stern went the extra measure. They printed up 2 million copies of their magazine in anticipation of a massive global sellout. And then the truth came out. It was a hoax, and Stern was left with a huge loss. So, how come the Hitler's Diaries were so successful? Let's start with organization. As the name implies, it was a diary. A diary is a very linear document. That means it has a very tight structure. And this allows the hoax writer to keep control over the facts so that there are no glaring inconsistencies that inevitably pop up with less structured works, and which, in the case of a hoax, will strip away the one thing you need most. Not to be convincing, but rather to keep earning the benefit of the doubt. In this case, the highly organized chronological structure of Hitler's diaries enabled the hoax writers to keep the benefit of the doubt on their side. The second criteria in vetting the work is what we call the voice. Each writer has their own particular way of phrasing things, of constructing sentences. This is called voice. The more writers that are contributing to the work, the more voices you have. In the case of the Hitler Diaries, there was just one voice. So when the reader accepts that voice as being authentic, there's nothing to challenge that perception later on in the work, as will happen when you have multiple voices. With an authentic work, multiple voices works just fine. However, when you're perpetrating a fraud, bringing in a team of writers to create those necessarily credible alternate voices is complex, expensive, and very risky. The genius of the Hitler Diaries was that you not only had a very tightly organized document in chronological order, but it was written in one voice. As any thief will tell you, the simpler the scam, the better. Then we come to the third criteria: demand. If you're going to do a hoax, you do it with some kind of a payday in mind. In the case of Hitler's Diaries, it was money, and Stern magazine was willing to pay for this hoax because they knew people talk about Adolf Hitler. Or in other words, it was demand content. Now let's apply the criteria of organization, voice, and demand to the Colburn Bible. In terms of organization, the Colburn Bible is very loosely organized. It really is a collection of anthropological field notes and ancient folklore. Had it not been for the Glastonbury Abbey arson of 1184, it might have had more structure. We believe that it did, in the original Egyptian texts and Celtic texts. However, the priests who survived the attack on the abbey and took the manuscript to Scotland only had what remained from the blaze, and they put it together the best way that they could. Consequently, the organization of the work is just enough to facilitate a coherent dialogue between researchers and those who care to study the text. Part of the reason why it was so difficult to even create a loose structure for the surviving texts from the Glastonbury Abbey fire was the number of voices involved. As you recall from the Hitler Diaries, there was just one voice, the hoax writer in the voice of Adolf Hitler. In contrast to that, the Colburn Bible was written by a large host of anonymous authors.
there could very well have been as many as 244 different contributors to this ancient work. And even if you wanted to be as conservative as possible and say, we'll just accept 10% of that amount, you still have way too many authors involved to create a convincing hoax. That is, unless you have unlimited time and money to pull together a team that'll stay quiet after the hoax is perpetrated. The third and final criteria, demand. When it comes to the Colburn Bible and demand, let's be frank, it only came out of hiding in the early 90s. Not that many copies have been distributed as of yet throughout the world, and odds are you didn't learn of its existence until just a short while ago. So given that this document is loosely organized, written in multiple voices, has no demand, and is about the size of the King James Bible, there is only one logical conclusion. There is no demand incentive in creating a hoax on the scale of the Colburn Bible. That being said, the three criteria of organization, voice, and demand do not answer one simple question. Why has the Colburn Bible endured for all these millennia? And what could have possibly motivated generation upon generation of anonymous caretakers to ensure its survival? The answer to that is simple. The words of the Colburn Bible resonate with immense insight. Here's one example. It comes from the Book of Scrolls. This is the secret of life. Man lives in God, and God lives in man. This answers all questions. Could you call this an ordinary truth? Ordinary truths are born of a generation and can very well pass with that generation. A great truth survives many millennia and countless generations. Because when you really get down to the crux of it, what makes a great truth endure is that it is by and of necessity simple. It's this immense wealth of great truths you find in this book that really tell you it's genuine. This is not the fabrication of a charlatan or a madman, because such people do not contemplate the great truths that can transcend millennia, but rather they weave great lies to serve their own perverted agendas. And perhaps therein lies the single greatest virtue of the Colburn Bible. It gives us a benchmark. With it, we can see what a great truth looks like so that we can understand the great lies when they are foisted upon us. This is Marshall Masters, publisher of the Colburn Bible, and I'll catch you on the backside of the flyby.
We thank you for listening to this special presentation by Marshall Masters, a former CNN Science feature producer and the publisher of the Colburn Bible. You can learn more about this 3,600-year-old secular wisdom text at colburn.com. That's K-O-L-B-R-I-N.com.